listening to Highland Radio. Hello, good morning. You're very welcome along to this Saturday morning's weekend edition with me, Greg Hughes. Coming up on the programme, Donegal goalie Paul Durkin will join us before 10 to discuss the great Ethiopian run of which he is an ambassador. We'll also get his views on Rory Gallagher's appointment as the new Donegal manager. John Campbell tells us about the Finnhop School programme, which is entering its sixth year. Mary Phelan discusses a documentary to be broadcast on the Meehan family from Letterkenny. Entrepreneur Niamh Gallagher talks about his wish to locate his IT business on Arranmore Island, but the infrastructural shortfall that could be stopping that happening. And we get reaction to the big announcement that the Script will play a concert in Croke Park next year. The news hasn't everyone excited. All this and much more between now and 12. Text the programme 086 770 0555. Call Yvonne on 07491 25000, or tweet me at Greg Hughes. Okay, I suppose it's Christmas now that Halloween is over. At least that's what the shops will be telling us. Also coming up in the programme, by the way, actually, before I digress, thousands are expected on the streets of Donegal later today to protest at water charges. We'll talk to one of the organisers to see how those plans are progressing there. So loads to come between now and 12. The most important thing, of course, is you listening at home or wherever you are today and interacting with us. Just to remind you, text us on 086 770 0555, and also send your requests in as well if you so wish to that number. Righty-o, joined in studio by a man that literally needs no introduction. Hello.
Good morning, Greg.
I suppose I should do it.
I'd say Tom Comack when you won't say it, because I don't think you flatter me somewhat.
Tom Comack is a journalist with the Donegal Democrat and, of course, Highland Radio's GAA correspondent. And this programme doesn't go together by accident, because, of course, Tom, we are going to be talking about the news today. But what an opportunity to talk about the new Donegal manager. Rory Gallagher confirmed last night. As a journalist, as a fan, your reaction?
Yeah, well, I think it's a very positive one. I think Rory is best positioned for the position. He was with Jim McGuinness for 3 years, has worked with the under-21s last season with along with Maxi Curran as Maxi Curran's deputy, and has been involved with Kilcar for the last couple of years of the club as well. So he knows the scene very well, probably knows it better than anybody else that was in the job in terms of working with the players. I think it's seen by many as a kind of a continuation on of the Jim McGuinness era. I
know some of the Nationals are putting almost a negative slant in that, as if we're desperate to try and keep that going, if you know what I mean. Well, I know at least one article kind of is suggesting that.
I haven't got around to reading those yet, but I wouldn't be surprised, and it wouldn't unduly worry me, but keep it going is to keep the success going. Success we have enjoyed over the last 4 years has been phenomenal under Jim McGuinness, and really Rory Gallagher is stepping into a big job. But he has pledged that he's going to do everything in his power to keep Donegal at the top table, and he paid tribute to Jim McGuinness last night, because it was Jim who introduced him and brought him into the fold as such. He's a native of Balik, which is just across the border from South Donegal, and would have a strong affiliation, his family, the Gallaghers, with Donegal, and I know he would have followed Donegal football as much as Fermanagh football. But he was a fantastic footballer. Very few people realise it, but Rory Gallagher, in the modern era of playing football, he's the only player, along with Peter Canavan, that was the top scorer in Ulster for 3 years in a row. Wow. Now, it was easy for Peter Canavan because he was involved with a very successful team, but the top scorer in Ulster Championship football for 3 years in a row, Rory Gallagher holds that record along with. So he's a fantastic footballer, and from what I gather as well, very popular with the players. I know there was acrimony of him between himself and Jim McGuinness, and we never really found out what was the problem this time last year. We've heard a couple of stories, but we've never headed through one, and we probably never will until either Rory or Jim decides to write the book.
They're holding that one back in years
to come. But from what I gather, he was very popular with the players and very popular with the senior players. So once he declared an interest, I think he was always going to be.
This, given Donegal's involvement in the football championship over recent years, you could argue very strongly, couldn't you, that it's one of the top three or four jobs in the country, or at least in terms of the attention it will get, perhaps. an incredibly young man. Perhaps even, is he the youngest inter-county football manager?
I was just thinking about that last night.
So it's a big challenge for him as a person.
It's a huge challenge for him because, okay, he was number two to Jim McGuinness. He was joint manager with John McNulty in Kilcar. He was assistant to Maxie Curran last year and had a big say with the under-21s. But he's now out front and this is a big challenge for him. And so I'm sure it's one he's looking forward to. And obviously the jury's out on that front because it's easy to be a number two and to be standing back and giving advice. But now you have to stand on the bridge. And, but I'm sure he has learned a lot. He's played at the highest level. He's worked under a lot of managers. Mostly recently, obviously, Jim McGuinness, who he would, I'm sure, have learned an awful lot from. But he's played club football in Dublin with St. Bridges, has played under Jerry McEntee, who was a former Meath player, obviously a man that had great knowledge on the football. He played with St. Gall's in Belfast, won an All-Ireland club with them, and, has played at the highest level. And from what I gather, not only was he a very influential player with St. Gall's, but he was also a very influential man in terms of coaching and tactics.
We shouldn't forget that he wasn't simply there to learn from Jim McGuinness. He contributed already to Donegal's success.
It was unfortunate that they split up because the general feeling was that they were the perfect team really. Rory Gallagher has, by all accounts, a very good tactical brain, and I know from speaking to him, he eats, sleeps and drinks football, and football is his life, and so that's very important. But it's a huge, huge, huge job because, as you quite rightly say, Donegal are right up there now, right up there at the top in the All Ireland this year. Defeated quarter finalists last year, all right, three Ulsters in a row. You know, so it is Donegal is big.
Us getting beaten is a shock now, and that brings its own challenge.
That's right.
One positive is, Jim McGuinness hasn't done an Alex Ferguson. I mean, he's left a reasonably decent team there. That sounds like I'm critical of it, but what I'm saying is Rory's going to want to bring his own players in, he's want to develop it. Some players, who's to say, may or may not go, but the core of a very good team remains.
Well, Rory's mentioned that in his address to the county committee last night, that one of the reasons that influenced him to go for the job was the talent that was there in the current squad, plus the talent that's coming through at under 21 at minor. Remember, we have appeared in the last two Ulster under 21 finals, albeit we lost both of them. We won an Ulster minor last year under Declan Bonner, reached the very first ever All-Ireland minor final. So there's quite a lot of talent coming through.
It's exciting.
And I know a lot of people were saying it's a poison chalice, and a lot of people were saying when Jim McGuinness stepped down, you know, there's no one going to fill his shoes, and that may very well be true, but there'll nobody want to fill his shoes. But you know, we looked, and obviously there was three positions announced last night. You have Maxie Curran involved as under 21 manager for another term. You also have Declan Bonner reinstated for another year as Donegal minor manager.
That's good for the conveyor belt to keep that consistency.
But the point I wanted to make was you had three candidates interested, three other candidates as well as Rory Gallagher interested in the senior job. Mm-hmm. You had two or three candidates interested in the under 21, and likewise you had another candidate very keen on the minor job. So, and it's not that terribly long ago since we had to go looking for people. You know, we couldn't find anybody when we had brought in Brian McIver. We couldn't find anybody when we brought in Mickey Moore. Nobody in the county wanted to stand up. Now everybody does.
That's a very good point.
So that's where we're at. And it is a big job. It's a huge job. And unlike when Jim McGuinness came in, nobody had any expectation. Now there's huge expectation. So that's something that
Our expectation should be in the Rory Gallagher era now. I mean, Jim has done an awful lot, but it wouldn't be fair to if we start doing this comparison situation.
Oh God, no, I don't think so.
We've had the Jim McGuinness era. And we'll probably have another, and as you say, I mean, he revolutionised the game here on all levels. But now this is the Rory Gallagher era, and we have to let him have his space and play the way he wants to play, and so on.
We have to realise that we're not going to be winning All Irelands every year. We're not Kerry. We're not going to be winning Ulster titles every year.
But
as long as you're up there competing at the level, and if you're competing often enough and long enough, you make the breakthrough. Okay. What Jim McGuinness achieved, and I've said it umpteen times, and I keep repeating it. What Jim McGuinness achieved in 2012 was nothing short of a sporting miracle. Mm-hmm. And okay, we didn't go all the way this year to win an All-Ireland. We reached an All-Ireland, and I recall saying to myself in a quieter moment after the defeat the hammering in Croke Park last year against Mayo in the All-Ireland quarter-final. You know, we're back to kind of, you know, cross Midland territory, back to pre-where Jim McGuinness. And I said to myself, Jim McGuinness will do a fantastic job if we are promoted back to Division 1 football again for next season, which we have achieved, and win an Ulster final. And in my book, that was as big achievement as literally winning the All-Ireland. Yeah. Now, the ordinary supporters out there are not, sorry, I rephrase that, supporters out there may not appreciate that, but that's the level at which Jim McGuinness has taken it to, and the level of expectation has risen as accordingly.
086 77 00 555 if you want to text on that. Also call us 0749 125 000. Yvonne waiting to take your call. If you're just switching on to the news of that appointment, Rory Gallagher has been given a 3-year term with a 4th year as an option. He's going to take some time, Tom, before we wrap this part up, to select his backroom team. That wasn't confirmed last night.
Yeah, there was no mention of backroom team at all last night, and I know Rory's going to take some time. He didn't wish to do any interviews afterwards because I approached him and he said he wanted to take time, and he says he also didn't want to take away from County Final, which is obviously on tomorrow
at Glenswellyn.
The big game, which is on tomorrow at Glenswellyn and St. Junan. So he's going to take some time. There's been talk, you know, I think it's been no great secret, and has already been in the media, that Gary McDade, who is manager at Glenswellyn, has also done a fantastic job with Glenswellyn.
Maybe that's why it wasn't mentioned.
maybe that's why it was mentioned.
So and just a word to 1-year terms for Declan Boner. It's fantastic, I think, with no disrespect to anyone else interested in it, that he gets an opportunity to try and go one better this year. And also Maxi Corrin, who is under 21 manager. You welcome both of those appointments, do you? And do you think it's important to have that little bit of consistency to see can each team go one step further in their respective
With no
goals.
Disrespect to the other people that were going for the job in terms of the under 21, you had Gary Duffy from Buncrana and you had Eamon O'Boyle from St. Junan's here, who enjoyed great success with St. Junan's over at all levels, even up to the right senior level. But I think the key factor is for the under 21s, because the under 21 is so close to the senior, is the relationship between Rory Gallagher and Maxi Corrin. They worked together under Jim McGuinness, they worked together with the under 21s last year, so I think that's a key factor there, and probably maybe deciding factor as well. Okay. Having said that as well, Maxi Corrin had led Donegal to 2 Ulster under 21 finals. In relation to the Declan Boner one, now there was one other candidate in for that position, Sean Paul Barrett, and Sean, I have a certain sympathy for Sean Paul today, but Sean Paul has been involved with Donegal at under 15, 16, 17, had brought them up for the last 3 years, had worked with that group of players, basically the group of players that are going to be minors this year. And there was a belief that, you know, his time was going to be this year. Now, unfortunately, it'd be very hard to remove Declan Boner, given that he had brought won an Ulster title.
Such an unbeaten run as well.
And brought it on an unbeaten run. The only game they lost in 2014 was the All-Ireland final.
Hard to take someone
And he had a good backroom team as well. And I don't think people realise that the level which to Declan Boner went, he actually brought in the parents and he got people to speak to the parents in terms of education, in terms of lifestyles and everything, and the importance of young men playing football and continuing to play football. And he put a lot into it. There was a lot of people working behind the scenes for him. It was a big role, and he did it, and I think it was going to be difficult, but I'm very sympathetic towards Sean Paul Barrett as well,
because his day will come
hopefully.
Okay. Right, what do you think at home? 086 77 00 555, or at work, sorry, or wherever you are, of course, or call us on 0749 125 000. It's the weekend edition with me, Greg Hughes, Tom Comack in studio for the next 20 minutes. We're going to take a break. Coming up after that, we'll be discussing, of course, the massive protests right across the country. And also we'll be asking the question which has been posed in the papers today, are Irish people racist towards the travelling community? If you've anything to say on that, 0749 125 000. Welcome back. Malcolm says, Rory's the right man for the Donegal job. I'm sure he'll be a great manager just like Jim. And yes, we will win, and Kerry will not win, Sam, every year. They always had it easy street down the years with a good team. Rock on, Rory. and Donegal. Keep your calls, comments and requests coming in studio with the Donegal Democrat journalist Tom Colmack, also Highland Radio's GAA correspondent. We'll get your views before we let you go on tomorrow's big game, Tom, but now we're looking at the front of the newspapers and you have the Star there, which is posing an emotive question, or is it a statement?
Yeah, well, the Star actually is the only paper this morning that isn't leading on the water, so they have a very interesting story, and I suppose it's a common one that crops up. Irish are racist to travellers, and it's a statement by John Connors. He's the bomber in Love Hate. For those of you who watch Love Hate, I don't watch it.
He's a fantastic actor, by the way.
I must be one of the few people in the country. But he reckons, speaking to the Star yesterday, that racism against travellers is the last acceptable racism in Ireland. Now, I'm sure that's questionable, and I'm sure the Romanian community down in Waterford will have other ideas about that, given what I went on down there this week. But he said, and he's quoted in the article, I think even the most liberal or left-wing types, even hippies, think it is acceptable. But not against any other ethnic group. So in other words, he's opened up a very emotive issue.
Is he right?
I don't know.
I think he is right.
Well, he's going on to say that even his own child was bullied in school. And, you know, I think bullying in school isn't just confined to travellers. But I'm not sure. I do feel sometimes that maybe there is... you know, how do you treat an ethnic group who wanted to be treated differently to the rest of us? I'm not sure. I don't have as much contact. I know when I was growing up and living in Roscommon, the travellers used to come around regularly, and my mum and dad used to bring them in and give them tea and give them goodies, and maybe my mum would have a baked loaf of bread or something and give them and all that type of thing. So I certainly never would be racist against travellers.
But I would hope not to be. The issue. And I mean, racism, if a dislike of any particular group. I mean, racism is a word that's put on it, of course. But to have that conversation, really, you have to have it with both parties involved, don't
yes.
you? Like, are travellers doing enough to integrate on the level they want to with the general population? Terrible terminology, but you know what I mean. And then, you know, are the settled community, have they got views that are entrenched in their minds that are based on no experience with travellers? If you are going to have that conversation, it has to be a broad conversation, doesn't it?
Yeah, and
really?
I don't think we're capable of having broad conversations about anything in this country at the moment. It's gone a bit, you know,
left and right.
But you know, in relation to it, obviously, this John Connors, he's only 24. By all accounts, you see he's a good actor.
No, he's brilliant.
I haven't seen that. As I say, I must be one of the few people that don't follow watch Love Hate, because I don't particularly like it, but I did see it once, I think, and I felt the violence and everything in it. Maybe it's something about me, but I didn't enjoy it. And somebody said to me recently that it's reality, cop on. It's reality really egged up, to be honest with you. It's not reality in as such.
Yeah, but there's, even if it were reality, there's a certain reality that we don't want to have to experience on a weekly basis. Some of us don't. Personally, I like it. It's up there with one of the best produced programs from this country. He's been particularly interesting. It's interesting that he's using his position at this point to bring the conversation up. But I think unless it's to go around in circles, it has to be a conversation involving the travelling and settled community, and both communities looking at the situation and what their roles are in the relationship.
Yeah, and a rational conversation without, if somebody takes a view about travellers or about anybody, a personal view that, you know, isn't extreme, that people don't, you know, brand people automatically, you're racist if you say this, or you're racist if you say
I think the media has to take a lot of responsibility in a lot of these things. There was an awful situation during the week in which a woman in Longford was the subject of, she was bundled into her car.
There was a man charged yesterday. Precisely.
Now, immediately after that, one of the headlines in the local media down there was, and the headline was this, Gardaí confirm foreign national involvement, effectively.
Yeah.
Now, given what's happened in Waterford with the Roma community and what have you, and maybe, you know, a whole community being painted with one brush, it's not helpful if the media sort of make the story being the fact that these people aren't born and bred Irish people, is it? I mean, what's your views on that?
Well,
is it a story that they're foreign nationals allegedly involved in it?
You can take it two ways. You can take it one way as a way of describing who was involved. You can take it as the other way as racist, in the sense that it wasn't part of
an appeal for information. You know.
Yeah. It can be classed as racism. I know, but I think sometimes, I think people need to know these things, and if foreign nationals or anybody, or if they're Irish, or if whatever description they can give.
But you wouldn't give a description. You wouldn't say two Irishmen involved in a crime. So why would you single out two members? I mean, at some point, people have come here, you're in Ireland.
They're either going to be Irish or they're going to be somebody else.
People have moved here, okay, yeah, many, many years ago. They've gone through the recession with the rest of us. They're working, in most cases, contribution tax. They're children in school with Irish accents.
I personally think anybody that bundles a woman into a car and hijacks her car, any description of them that'll help find them.
It wasn't for that purpose, though.
Maybe we disagree on that one.
Okay, a caller says, are we racist against travellers? Well, that was the question. I don't think it's a fair comment. I think the travellers are as good as the rest of us. They have their own culture and they have limited living conditions according to where they live. They get blamed for a lot of things and most of it isn't their problem. So that's a fair, balanced point there.
It's not in relation to that story, but and I know we're probably going to discuss water and water and more water.
We're going to be doing that next.
But just one sidebar story in the Irish Independent: the secret sadness suffered by our teens. It's a new study out by the University of Maynooth, which was carried out on how young people are coping with life, with life, and they've done a 3-page special insight on it. But the sidebar is half of people seeking help from crisis centres for prevention of self harm and suicide are under 18, and 1 in 5 of them are younger than 14. So that's another issue, and bullying at school is one of them. And believe it or not, just another detail in the sidebar. The service-based study it's the first service-based study of its kind in Ireland. Deliberate self-harm has found that adolescent girls are the most at risk. More than seven in ten of those contacting the Pieta House service are after an episode of self-harm or with suicidal thoughts are female. So it's a 3-page. Study which has been carried out at the first University of Maynooth. It's the first of its kind, and I haven't got time to read it, but
it's certainly going to make for interesting reading.
It's going to make for interesting reading for parents, and the statistics are shocking, and it just shows you know that there's a lot of people suffering in Ireland at the moment, and there's a lot of pressures on our young people, and I suppose parents and those of us who are involved in youth organisations or in football clubs or whatever should take note of that, of the pressures of young people and what's facing them at the moment.
I do sometimes wonder, and this might be somewhat controversial, we're incredibly negative. You know, it's an incredibly negative environment at the moment, I think, a lot. You know, that there's everything is bad. The government's bad, water rates are bad, you know, the bondholders are bad, employment is bad, immigration is, everything is bad. And I do wonder, for people who are not in a very good place at the moment and are working through that, you know, that it can't help that there seems to be no light at the end of the tunnel at the moment. Yeah, and if it is, it's drained, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think that's where our leaders and our politicians and our leaders in community, in society, have to be very, very careful. Because, as you said, there's a big anti-everything movement at the moment in Ireland. And, you know, everything that's happening in Ireland isn't bad, and everything that the government is doing isn't bad. You know, there are good things happening as well. And there just has to be, you know, I think we have to stand back from it, and I think the leaders in politics have to stand back and not be always using the political opportunity to knock things when they're good. You know, sometimes, you know, I think we have to be very, very careful, and I speak more on about when the water issue comes up. I think we have to be very, very careful that everything, shall we say, Michael Noonan or Enda Kenny or whoever says is bad. You know, I think we have to be very careful about that.
Right, we'll continue the point into the water then, because we're on that conversation.
But I think we have to be very, very careful in relation to all these issues. And what I must say as well is that those in government and those in the traditional parties are doing nothing either to prevent that line of thought.
There is also this thing, though, where it's not just driven by government. It's almost like a collective thinking, in that you can't almost be positive about something, because people say, well, how can you be positive about that when such and such and such and such?
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, are we as a nation, not everyone, but a lot of people stuck in a negative rut It doesn't matter what a government does.
Yeah. As I said, we're going to go on and talk about the water, but I'll give you an example of one of my difficulties with politics and my difficulty with politics of all kind for quite some time. And I've probably mentioned it here before on doing the papers, but way back in a budget in the early 2000s, Charlie McCreevy pulled a rabbit out of the hat, where he announced that he was going to do centralisation, and there was government departments going to move to Donegal Town, they were going to move to Buncrana, other parts of the country, other parts of the country as well, and particularly the Western Seaboard. Now, that was blown out of the water by the opposition politicians, who were prompted by the senior civil servants, public servants, who did not want to move to the country. Now, and politicians of all creed that were in opposition jumped on that and ridiculed it. Now, to me, it was a glorious opportunity. We see at the moment the over-expansion of the population of Dublin. You know, as I keep saying, and the Western Seaboard and the Western counties just decaying away population-wise, and a total imbalance in the population in the country. As I say, what would
people wouldn't move.
The point I'm making is people wouldn't move, and these were the people that dictated, the very people at the top. To be quite honest with you could run a department from the moon at the moment, and the way some of them are run, they might be better been run from the moon. But the reality is that it was these people at the very top of the public service that didn't want to move because their families were in Dublin or whatever, and there were access to education and all that, and they influenced the politician moved upon. The point I want to make is, imagine what if a government department had been moved to Buncrana with maybe 200 jobs, or a government department had been moved to Donegal Town, this Westport, you can talk about them, Gort, whatever, in Galway, whatever. You can talk about all the... Imagine what that would have done for the economies
But people wouldn't move, though. But you can't force people to move.
You can. In the public service, you can.
Well, you can't.
You can. That's part of what the...
You can't ask people to move if they don't want to.
You can. That's part of the public service once you sign up for the public service.
Oh, I don't know. Well, anyway... Yeah.
It should have happened.
Oh, it's
but the point I make the point I'm making is, imagine what if a department had been moved to Buncrana or Donegal Town or whatever, what it would have done for the economy of those areas, what it would have done for the balance in the population of the country, rather than where we're having a situation in Dublin now and the Eastern Seaboard, where house prices are already beginning to.
But it didn't happen. But I take your point. We're centralising now. We're not decentralising. Yeah. Gary Doherty of Right to Water. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Tom.
How are you?
I'm very well. I'm just looking out at the rain today, which is a bit ironic, considering the protests that we're having today, but hopefully it won't stop in the...
Well, it doesn't fall from the sky, does it? Or it does, actually. Some people saying 5,000, others saying 7,000, 8,000. I suppose this is the last rallying call for those who are opposed to water charges. We've got protests in Letterkenny is the main one, you could argue, of course, also in Lifford and Ballyshannon. You're anticipating a huge turnout, are you?
Absolutely. From the word that we're getting from people on the ground and indeed on social media is that there's going to be a huge turnout of people, particularly in Letterkenny, but also in Lifford and in Ballyshannon today at 2 p.m. What we're seeing is a huge growing number of people, huge movement towards an anti-water charges protest.
What
today.
Is the movement towards? Is it the move towards scrapping of Irish water? Is it a move towards more concessions from government? Or is it a move to scrapping the whole lot altogether?
Basically, what Right to Water is, we're an umbrella group. We're a mishmash of various different political organisations and trade unions and indeed individuals. And what we're calling for is people who basically are against the water charges. We're asking people who have taken the decision that they won't pay, and indeed people who have taken the decision that they will pay under duress for fear of consequences.
Because there are those...
They basically come out and say that they're against these water charges.
I beg your pardon, Gary. There are those who are inclined to pay the charges but don't want to give their PPS numbers. So it's not necessarily going to be everybody. You know, there are people who are prepared to pay that will be there protesting at how this has been implemented, I'm sure.
Yeah, and they're more than welcome to come. As I say, this is what Right to Water is. It's just it's a grouping of people who are against the water charges, people who will pay on who are feeling that they're forced to pay under duress because of consequences that they may face, are more than welcome to come because it's about voicing their opposition to the water charges. We're not putting forward any specific political proposals. That's for a different day, and it's for each political grouping to make those own proposals themselves.
Now, the thing about the last protest, it was very impressive in that, you know, so many people turned out on the streets of Dublin, and you know, it really gets the message across when you bring it to the front door of the Dáil, it seems. We're not too scattered out this time in that, you know, 90 protests all over the country. Really, will the same sort of message be sent, if you know what I'm saying?
Well, the message that was sent from the podium in Dublin in October when 100,000 people marched in opposition to the water charges, that we were trying to organise as many local protests today as possible, because we believe that will send the strongest possible message to the government. The reality is that, you know, there are government politicians and councillors and indeed party members in every town in the country. So the fact that we're having over 90 demonstrations today, we believe that will send a strong, powerful message, in addition to the 100,000 that were in Dublin a few weeks ago, and there's also plans for follow-up marches in Dublin in a few weeks as well.
And do you believe that, you know, the government's going to announce some measures over the course of the next couple of weeks? Do you think that will be enough to sort of weaken the movement?
Well, we've seen concessions already from the government. We've seen just this week that there was this cashback offer, if you will, of €100 on each bill.
Which doesn't make much sense if you can't afford to pay the bill, because, you know, you're receiving allowances retrospectively is counterintuitive if you can't pay.
That's exactly our argument. What we are saying is people cannot afford these charges, no matter what concessions the government gives to people. And that's why we're expecting so many people out on the ground today. Whatever further concessions that the government may or may not give to the people, we believe that we have the government on the run here. I firmly believe, and it's my personal belief, that the government are scared of the mass movement of people. This is people power personified here.
Right, Gary, the world-famous Mr. Chippy now in Letterkenny, people are accumulating there at 2 o'clock. Lifford and Ballyshannon starting at 2 as well. I suppose from your perspective, you want everyone out, regardless of political party or allegiance or whatever.
Absolutely. We're looking for everyone who's in opposition to the water charges to attend any of the demonstrations today.
All right.
I heard with interest this morning on your news bulletin that Fianna Fáil are attending. I've got various opinions on that.
Well, remember now, as a few of your colleagues in Right to Water have very strenuously made it clear to me that you're apolitical on this issue. So we'll leave it at that. Gary, thank you very, very much indeed. And we you know, hopefully people power works. If that's the will of the people, let's see it work.
Exactly, Greg. And just to remind everybody that it's 2 p.m. at Mr. Chippy and at the bottom of Crowan Heights in Lifford, and also in Ballyshannon at 2 p.m. as well. And we hope to see as many people there as possible, despite the wet conditions. We believe that there will be thousands of people in attendance.
All right, and I think it's going to dry up a bit for the afternoon, so we'll see. Thanks very much, Gary. Always a pleasure to chat to you.
Thanks, Greg. Good morning.
Good morning. Gary Doherty there. Tom, very briefly, I can't believe the time. What's your take on it? I mean, obviously, this is a movement of the people, for the people, and do you think it's going to work?
I think it is working.
I think it's working.
I think I heard Michael Noonan, which is my opposition to it. I come from a strange position, and I think I'm in the position of quite a lot of people. I have no difficulty with the water charge per se, because I'm all for broadening the tax net. But I think the way this has been implemented, it has been ridiculous, to say the least of it.
A shambles.
And again, it's indicative of an attitude of an upper and higher tier in our public services that come from that environment where, you know, there was 180 million spent on consultants. You know, consultants for what? You know, like, the infrastructure was there already. Okay, the infrastructure may not be great. I may need...
Yeah, but if we're talking about conserving water, why have a capped...
No, but the point I wanted
to... Go on ahead.
Every county council had a system in place. You know, how it took 80 million to bring all those together is unbelievable. And I think the one that really, really drove by people, spooked people, was the fact of bonuses to staff. Bonuses. And €180 for a call-out for a plumber to tell you what's wrong with your water meter. You know, there's a lot of plumbers listening to us this morning. They'd love to get €180 for every call-out they get.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely. Right, I've been asked, we've got 30 seconds for you to tell me who's going to win the county final tomorrow.
The county final tomorrow is going ahead, as I understand it. There was obviously some question marks about it during the week. As we speak at the moment, it's still going ahead, though, saying Niamh Connell have an appeal to the Ulster Council. I still think up to it coming in, they hadn't heard of anything about that. So it does look like the county final is going to go ahead. Glenswilly are the champions. Obviously, very strong team. We mentioned Gary McDeed already, the great job he has done. They have Neil Gallagher, Michael Murphy, two All-Stars in action tomorrow in McCool Park. Obviously, any team with Michael Murphy, it's very hard to rule them out. I have a sneaking suspicion that St. Junan's proved last week that they're capable of beating most teams in the county, and I think they'll win tomorrow.
And that's you and Martin McHugh going for St. Union, so my money's on Glenswilly.
Good for you.
Thank you very much. Tom Comack there, of course, our own GA sports correspondent and journalist with the Donegal Democrat. Thanks so much, Tom. Always a pleasure to have you in. And our newspapers are sponsored by Kelly's Central Mountain Top Letterkenny. Thanks very much to the guys over there as well. Back with more after this break. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Donegal All-Star goalkeeper Paul Durkin. Good morning to you, Paul.
Hi, Greg. How are you? How's it going?
Going very well indeed. Now, we are going to talk to you now about the great Ethiopian run in Addis Ababa. You are acting as an ambassador for this project. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Yeah, I suppose I've run into Father Michael McCullough a good few times, and he's very involved with it. It's a charity called VLM. They're based up in Dublin here, so they do a lot of work over there. And I suppose he approached me, and it's something that I kind of always wanted to do, and I'm looking forward to it now. Like, it's going to say it'll be a tough challenge. You know, it's at high altitude over there, so I wouldn't be the best known for doing a lot of running at the best of times. So I know I'm looking forward to it, and it's great to be involved with them. You know, they're really good people, you know, and they're always looking for volunteers, and they do a lot of good work over there. So no, I'm really looking forward to it.
And what will your what will the challenge involve?
Well, we go over for 3 or 4 days, and on the last day, there's a 10K run through Addis Ababa, and there's about 35,000 people do it. It's the Great Ethiopian Run. There's Haile Gebrselassie involved with it, so it's just pretty much over there, and we visit a few of the areas that they do some of the charity work, and then do the run on the last day.
Of course, there are a lot of unfortunate things happening around the world. Ethiopia used to be very much in the headlines, but isn't so much now. But still, people going through so much difficult time, going through such difficult times over there. It's important for people like yourself and others to use their profile to raise awareness of that.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm just delighted to be asked to do it. You know, Father Michael asked me, and it was I said straight away, you know, I'd love to get involved, and definitely it is, you know, to highlight it at all, brilliant. And so if anyone gets a chance, they should look up the website. It's VLM.ie, and just to see exactly what they do and some of the great work. There's some videos there of what sort of work they do over there, you know, and it's very good. And, you know, if anyone ever wants to, they're always looking for volunteers, as I said. So, it's great to be involved.
And how can people support you, Paul, if they wanted to?
Well, you know, that's just good to go on the website.
Okay.
There's stuff there. How to if anyone wants to donate to the charity, you know, I suppose they're pretty well set up for that. On the other side of it, like I'd probably do a small bit of fundraising, that, you know, and I suppose on the other side of it, like there's like thank Donna Kelly from KN who's sponsoring us to go over. So you know, everything that's raised goes straight to the charities, which is the main thing.
And finally, I know you shortened time overnight. We have a new Donegal manager, Rory Gallagher, appointed to the post. A reaction to that from you?
Yeah, I'm delighted, you know. Good time for Rory, you know. It's a long time now, so I think it'll be a good transition. And looking forward to seeing what his plans are. And fingers crossed, you know, hopefully might be in those plans. So, you know, it's a new beginning, and we'll just looking forward to the challenge.
Okay, listen, it's been fantastic speaking to you, Paul. Best of luck with the great Ethiopian run. And, of course, we all hope you're in those plans of Mr. Gallagher for the coming season. Thank you very much.
Thanks, my name. Cheers. Thank you.
You're very welcome back to the Weekend Edition here on Highland Radio every Saturday morning with me, Greg Hughes. Now, on the water issue, a caller says 800,000 people have paid for water. 100,000 people are protesting. Surely the majority should rule. If people don't want to pay for water, how come they bought over 400 million gallons of bottled water last year? Just as it relates to that 800 figure, I think that's a reference to how many information packs has been returned to Irish Water, which I don't think will give us a clear indication necessarily of how many people are actually willing to pay. If you're going to be faced with a bill for water, my suggestion is to fill in the form, wait for the bill to come, send them back and a €5 note, and tell them you'll pay the rest when they can convince you that the pipe leading to the meter is working properly and the water is okay to drink. As you've paid some money towards the bill, they can't take you to court for non-payment.